The rest is politics. U.S. is powered by our friends at Fuse Energy. We've been asking you to consider switching energy supplier to Fuse for the last few months by going to getfuse.com/US politics and signing up using the referral code US politics. But look, I get it. How can you trust a new company with something as important as powering your home? So don't just take my word for it. I had to look at Trustpilot to see what people are saying about Fuse's service. They get 4.7 stars out of 5. There's comment after comment saying how helpful and attentive they are. People clearly appreciate speaking to a real person rather than one of those chatbots. There are 5-star reviews for their smooth transfer from previous suppliers, compliments about smart meter installations, and I can see the words, second to none, repeated a few times. If you go to getfuse.com/US politics, you're going to save money, and you'll sign up using the referral code US politics. You can find out for yourself why customers are so pleased they switched. Visit getfuse.com/US politics for terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics US with me, Catty Kay.
And I am Anthony Scaramucci in an undisclosed location.
You're in London with the techno music. I can hear it in the background. I'm glad to hear you're having so much fun. We have a jam-packed show because you may have noticed there's just been a little bit of news here in Washington this week. But before we get to the program, we have some very exciting news. We asked you if you wanted extra content, and the response has been fantastic. So, since things are moving so quickly here in America, we are planning to release extra episodes at the start of every week. For our founding members, we're going to be broadcasting these episodes live on YouTube. And our first live stream is going to actually be at 8 p.m. UK time next Monday. So keep an eye on your inbox for that link. And of course, if you want to become a founding member and watch these episodes live, sign up at therestispoliticsus.com. For everybody else, we love you too. The episode is going to be available on Tuesday morning, wherever you get your podcasts. So with that out of the way, the news is wild here at the moment. I feel like, Anthony, I am in the middle of Hurricane Elon is sweeping through my city as I speak to you from Washington, D.C. So this week, we're going to talk about Elon Musk and Donald Trump and the extraordinary way in which he's pushing the boundaries of executive power all around this city and changing the face of the American government as we speak, alongside a group of very young software engineers. And then we're going to talk about the news from Gaza, or President Trump's plan to build the Riviera of Gaza. And we will also talk about some of the roadblocks that Donald Trump is already hitting amidst this chaos. So, where to start with Elon Musk? But I think what's worth pointing out, I had a conversation, Anthony, last night with somebody who is a big supporter of Donald Trump's, has been close to the president, is close to very senior people in the administration and has been in contact with them. And he said, listen, the disruption that is happening in the American government had to happen. He pointed out that the US government spent $4 trillion in 2019 and nearly $7 trillion in 2024. He says America's government has to stop spending money. It has to make cuts, that it's dangerous for America to carry on spending the way that it is. And he was very supportive of this disruption. He says the only way you can really trim government is to do what Elon Musk is doing throughout the US government. And he's literally going into government departments, getting access to their communications and computer systems and figuring out what to cut and what not to cut. That is not a view that many people here in this city have, because, of course, Washington is government central. So I know lots of people who are in a complete tizzy about this, people who have lost their jobs because of this, people think they're going to lose their jobs because of this, people who make a very valid argument that America is undermining its national security by cutting foreign aid programs. But for Donald Trump, I think it is a sign that he is kind of, you know, he's acting like a quasi king at the moment. And Elon Musk is his general out there with his army of engineers and his army of Twitter followers executing on Donald Trump's agenda. Is that what it looks like to you?
I guess the real question, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, has anybody left the government? They've said you can get 8 months of pay. Please leave the government.
Which is not even clear if that's legal, right? It's not clear that Elon Musk has the authority to do that, to give people 8 months of pay, because there's a $25,000 cap actually on what they're allowed to have.
So I don't know. Maybe he's rich enough where he could pay him the other 7 months or something. But but my question, though, to you is that, like, has anybody left? Has anybody said, you know what? I'm taking a powder here for Elon Musk and Donald Trump. I've worked for the federal government 10, 20, 30 years. I'm done. I'll take 8 months of pay and go find myself a private sector job.
So what I've heard is the reporting is that some 20,000 people, according to Elon Musk's team. Now, this is what Elon Musk is saying. And Elon Musk, I have to say, is operating with a very large degree of secrecy. So we don't really know all of the details of what he's doing. But his team at Doge is saying that some 20,000 people have taken this offer to leave the federal government. ABC News reported that a woman who agreed to take this deal, Elon Musk phrased it as, you can Netflix and chill or just take that vacation you've always wanted. She said, yes, I'll take the deal, and then has heard nothing since. And her line manager, she says, has told her, look, you shouldn't have taken that deal because it's not even clear the deal is legal. For me, the big question is, how much of what Donald Trump is doing with Elon Musk executing it is real and will change the face of American government? How much of it is a show to his MAGA crowd that he's doing dramatic things? How much of it is legal? And does Donald Trump even care if it's legal or not? At the moment, it's hard to know, right? Because we don't exactly know what Trump is doing. We don't know whether Congress or the courts are going to push back.
Okay, so I'm gonna make a couple of statements, and then I'd like you to react to these statements. I've been thinking about this all morning. So statement number one, there are no smart people that have ever been in the United States government until Elon Musk and Donald Trump arrived in the government. So everybody else that was there, whether it was Lincoln or Roosevelt or George Washington, you know, the country, according to Donald Trump, while he was campaigning, was an open sewer pipe. And everyone was, it's a nest of incompetency. Him and Elon Musk represent the only two smart people in the government. So therefore, even though this system has made America prosperous, the most prosperous economic nation in the world, and obviously has the most powerful military, there's no smart people around. So, okay, react to that. Is that how they think, Caddy, or do I have that wrong?
I think that's exactly how they think. And even more than that, they think that, as Elon has said, it's a nest of vipers. And in the case of USAID, it's a criminal organization is what he's called it. It's not just that they think these people are incompetent and they are the smartest people, including these young kids. I mean, one of these guys is 19 years old who is going into these agencies and getting into their software systems. It's that they think that they are all politically motivated against Donald Trump. So they think these people have an agenda, which is to thwart MAGA. And in some cases, I think they think these people are traitors, which is what Elon Musk has said, particularly anyone on the kind of humanitarian nonprofit side. They seem to believe are there with the sole objective of opposing Donald Trump. And maybe in the first administration, they found some of those people who were thwarting Donald Trump's agenda. But this time around, I think they are seeing treachery where actually there is just the functioning of government. One person gave me an example, which is that Elon Musk thinks that all of this money that was paid out between the election and the inauguration by USAID, actually, according to somebody I spoke to who's well-versed in US government, says actually that's what happens towards the end of the year. You disperse the rest of your payments. This was perfectly legal. It wasn't treacherous. It's just what government officials are there to do. So, yes, I think that's what they feel.
Number two, there have been systems in place. in the American government for multiple decades. And so these systems, interlock with each other, meaning Treasury needs justice if they want to transact on certain things. Justice would potentially need, I don't know, could meet the Department of Defense on something. It might need the State Department on something. There could be something going on. And so there's a system and a web of these governmental agencies that communicate with each other and operate with each other. Moreover, there are inspector generals in these places which are supposed to be nonpartisan and are supposed to observe the process to make sure that there's no illegal activity going on and there's no self-dealing going on. And of course, if there is, the inspector general makes a report and penalizes or fires or does whatever is necessary. Elon Musk and Donald Trump believe that is also terrible. And so therefore, those people should be fired. And whatever Musk wants to do in terms of the information that he is downloading from the Treasury Department, he's entitled to it. So if it's your Social Security number or mine, he's entitled to it. If it's line item disbursements going through the government, the $7 trillion that you just referenced, he's entitled to do a line-by-line observation of each of those things and then, I guess, opine on those through his X feed. And so there's probably 50 or 60 different laws that are being broken in terms of doing that, Caddy. In terms of rights to privacy, all different types of stuff. But Elon Musk and Donald Trump say, too bad, this is not a micro transgression. This is a macro transgression. And go sue us if you want, but we're going to do this.
Yeah, I think that you're right about the web that exists between the government agencies. And I have little doubt when you look at the jump in spending that is taking place in America since before COVID. I mean, $3 trillion is an awful lot of extra money to be spending. And I imagine that you could go through every single government agency on that line by line basis and find elements of waste or duplication or fraud or expenditure that is not aligned with your political position, particularly in the case, for example, of humanitarian aid, which is what they keep referring to. But you're also going to find an awful lot of things that are happening that need to happen. So when those software engineers are on the behalf of DOGE are now going in and reading those line by line items from Treasury payments, some of those Treasury payments might be payments to contractors who are getting old people to their medical appointments, for example. Is that the kind of thing that now one of those software engineers is going to see, you know, help to old people in disadvantaged communities? Right, we're going to rewrite the code and that payment is no longer going to be made. And I think that is why there is so much disquiet in Washington. We don't know whether they're just reading the code or writing the code. We don't know if these people have security clearances. We don't know what their intention is. It's very easy to say, as one kind of former official said, this is like telling the plane to stop its flight in mid-flight. You turn the engines off. That's kind of what Elon Musk is doing. It's what he did with Twitter, fired 80% of the employees, and you build it from the ground up. The question for a government is, let's say that contractor who takes old people to their medical appointments isn't getting paid next week. The old people don't go to their medical appointments. How does that actually work? You don't get your tax rebate. Your mum doesn't get her social security payment. We don't know what is going to happen in this breaking process.
Statement number three. And again, I agree with you, but I see the outrage of what is going on, I don't see any outrage. I mean, Hakeem Jeffries got out yesterday. He said something that was nonsensical. He said that there's a plot to steal your tax dollars through the U.S. Treasury. That's what Hakeem Jeffries said. And so that was incredibly disingenuous. The Democrats then said that the Elise Stefanik situation, she's going to be the U.N. ambassador, and we're going to delay that election to weaken Mike Johnson and weaken the Republicans in the House. We're going to delay her election. But they're supposedly for the democracy, but they're going to not have a democratic process to have an election because they're as hypocritical and as devious and maniacal as the Republicans. So the Democrats are caught flat-footed. Elon Musk and Trump are doing a blitzkrieg They thought about this for 3 or 4 years. This is a lightning strike on the bureaucracy. I don't speak German, so I don't know. It's Blitz bureaucracy. I don't know what it would be called, but they're coming in hard and they're coming in fast and they're doing hundreds of things at the same time so that you can't respond to all 100 things. What are we going to do? You're going to have 200 lawsuits in the administrative court, in the federal courts, to try to stop us from what we're doing. And so they're laughing, Caddy Kay. They're laughing. And they're saying to themselves, these people are weak. These people are flat-footed. And we're going to crush these people.
Yeah, and I think, look, what the White House wants to do is test the system. I think Donald Trump is testing the American system. Will Congress push back on this? And how they are doing this, the speed with which they are doing it, the extreme way they are doing this, Donald Trump and Elon Musk are doing far more to disrupt the American government than any president has ever done in a 4-year term or in an 8-year term. And we're only 2 weeks into the administration. But the way they are doing this is the point of it. It's a test case. So, for example, shutting down USAID is a test case. Can they then go down and shut other federal agencies? If Congress doesn't push back, and we don't see any signs certainly of the Republican Party pushing back, if the courts take too long to push back, then why not the Department of Education? Why not a whole load of other government departments? And I think what we have no idea of is what will be necessary efficiencies that might be made in this process and what will be total disruption and chaos and harm to the American people in this process. And Congress at the moment seems to be saying, and Mike Johnson has given a very mealy-mouthed answer when he was asked, you know, is Congress just going to roll over and let the White House shut down a government department? And he kind of said, well, it's more complicated than that. We'll have to look into it. I don't know. I don't want to piss off Donald Trump, effectively, is what he said. Donald Trump is acting as an imperial president at the moment, and no one's stopping him.
So lest anybody think this isn't planned, because of course it is planned, and you can just look at Project 2025 and you can go down the list and see the plan.
Which they swore they were not had anything to do with, by
right.
the way.
And so while this is going on, though, we're going from crony capitalism to crony imperialism in 16 days. While this is going on, Donald Trump campaigned on being a non-interventionist. He campaigned on getting us out of forever wars. He's effectively declared that he's going to own Greenland, potentially by military force, retake the Panama Canal, rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. But now he's talking about being a true neocon. He's Dick Cheney. He's going to move the American military into Gaza, and he's going to ethnically cleanse the 1.8 million people that live in Gaza. And by the way, I'm embarrassed for Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm embarrassed for him, because for Trump to say that and to Netanyahu to be a sophisticated person and somebody that has to live in that neighborhood with the Sunni Arab governments that are surrounding him, and to him say that and to him almost have like a smirk or a smile on his face, I'm actually embarrassed for Benjamin Netanyahu, because when somebody's acting like that, and you're sitting there allowing it, it doesn't make you look good. You can pretend it does. You can pretend you're catering to your right-wing conservative base in Israel, but it doesn't make you look good. And the problem I'm having with all of this, Caddy, is that we're allowing it to happen. You know, I said this morning to the Atlantic Partnership here in London that Homer tried to tell us 3,000 years ago that we can't handle the truth. He had the figure Cassandra. She was the metaphor that represented this about our nature. Cassandra was trying to tell her dad, who was the king of Troy, the Greeks are coming. They're going to destroy the city. And she was blessed with clairvoyance, but she was also cursed with nobody believing her because it was the truth. And of course, Aaron Sorkin took that Cassandra and placed it in the Jack Nicholson figure and A Few Good Men 32 years ago, where he very famously stands up in the courtroom and says, you want the truth, but you cannot handle the truth. So we now have Republicans that know what Donald Trump is doing is actually insane. They know he's not well mentally or psychologically to be doing every single thing that he's doing simultaneously. There's not a 4D chess game going on. He's sitting there like a buffoon eating the chess pieces, but no one's going to say anything to him. Okay, so now what, Caddy? You live in Washington.
Right.
I have an allergic reaction to Washington. So go ahead, tell me what's going to happen.
The Gaza thing is very interesting, and I agree with you. The most extraordinary thing watching that press conference was watching Benjamin Netanyahu's face.
You should be embarrassed. And by the way, if you're a supporter of Israel, you should call Netanyahu and say, you know, you should be embarrassed by the way you handled yourself in front of that buffoon.
The smirk he had on his face, I mean, maybe he's just imagining that this gets him out of trouble with the right wing of his coalition, because this is exactly what they would like to see happen. And maybe they're going to think, right, we're going to stick around in this coalition government for phase two or phase three of this peace deal, because maybe this crazy plan of Donald Trump's, which even Lindsey Graham is saying is a non-starter, who is one of the more hawkish Republican senators. I mean, the lineup of Republican senators who have already come out and said this is a crazy idea is striking in this environment where they seem happy to say, okay, RFK can be head of healthcare and Tulsi Gabbard can be head of intelligence. But even they, who have rolled over and had their bellies patted by Donald Trump, even they are saying, okay, this is one too far. And yet maybe for Benjamin Netanyahu, who's thinking, look, this just gives me a little bit of a lease of life on my coalition government, keeps the right wing happy. You never know. Donald Trump throws out these ideas. But what was striking to me about yesterday, about that press conference on Tuesday evening, was the degree of detail. I mean, Donald Trump, like you just said, this is not just thrown out there, any of this. This is planned. I mean, he came out with a lot of detail. It was written down. He was reading it. This was not Donald Trump riffing. Since that press conference, I've had senior Middle Eastern diplomats texting me saying this is unbelievable. The Jordanians, we know, and I know it from my conversations with Jordanian officials, cannot accept this. They're already a majority Palestinian country. They've seen how disruptive that could be during the Gaza war. It's very precarious for the King of Jordan, this proposition. So I don't think anyone in Washington is taking that seriously. It could be the moment where we see, and we have seen, some Republican pushback, because it's not what Donald Trump was elected to do. So this is something where maybe the more rational voices in the Republican Party will turn around and say, hold on a second, we were elected to do something about the price of eggs and not get into forever wars.
We're talking now about an ethnic cleansing in Gaza, but over the weekend, he was putting 25% tariffs on our two closest allies that live on the same continent as us. So all of this is absurd to you and me, and we both know that.
You talk to some of these Republican senators. You have good relationships with some of them. Mm-hmm. You know that some of them do not like all of the people that have been approved to the cabinet. For me, I said earlier that Donald Trump is behaving like a king, and Elon Musk is his general in this fight. The real sign of just how much power Donald Trump has, and one Trump supporter who is a serious guy in the finance world said to me, Donald Trump is the most powerful American president, at least since FDR, if not more powerful than FDR, and that he will end up with his face on Mount Rushmore because of how much power he has. But the sign of Donald Trump's power is the fact that Republican senators have agreed to RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard becoming cabinet members. You speak to these Republicans. I know you have conversations with some of these Republican senators. Why are they saying yes?
He is the politician, the American politician of the last 40 years. He's now, in my mind, eclipsed Reagan in terms of the force of his personality and the dent that he's making on American society. And I don't like it. And he's not popular with me. And Joe Biden enabled him. It's almost like he gave him 12 years because we were living under the shadow of Donald Trump during the Biden administration. So he's almost gotten the 12 years. FDR got 13. So weirdly, he's been overseeing this disaster for 12 years. And so, yes, he's very consequential. What those senators will say, and I won't name them because I don't want to out them, but that what they will say to me, Anthony, of course I shouldn't have voted yes on Hegseth or Tulsi Gabbard or whoever, but you want to know something? I can't die on this hill because what's going to happen, Elon Musk called me and said he's going to put $100 million into my alt-right primary candidate next time. And he's going to spend $100 million on my neighborhood to knock me out of the Senate. And so do you want a Looney Tune to take my seat in the Senate? You knock Liz Cheney into center field, and we have a Looney Tune that replaced her. So what would you like me to do? Do you want me to die on this hill? Or something more consequential could come up, at which point I'm there as a moderate to prevent something quite disastrous from happening. And so it's an interesting thing to say, and I respect it. They're politicians, so they're not going to always do the most principled thing in the room.
One other thing I've heard this week, which was also quite disturbing, was from a former Democrat in the House. She stepped down in the last cycle, but she's very close to other members of Congress still, and she has always worked in a bipartisan way. She said to me that if they speak out against Donald Trump, members of Congress in the Republican Party are not just worried about whether they're going to be primaried and Elon Musk is going to put a whole load of money into them being primaried. They're also worried for their lives and for the security of their spouses and their children, because Elon Musk can turn that Twitter army against members and he will out them, even though ironically he has said that it's a crime that his little Doge team of teenagers is being named in the press. He is quite happy to turn his army of Twitter followers against members of Congress, and it can become a real security threat for them. So they could be primaried, or they would have to deal with the fact that their wife or husband and kids could actually be in a position where the Twitter mob could literally turn against them.
And I was at a breakfast this morning where I was told that there are elevated threats against public officials that are against Donald Trump. Elevated, meaning, you know, there's a lot of barking that takes place on X and there's no bite. But there are elevated threats against our public officials if they go against these people. And the FBI has notified some of the public officials about their need to get more security around them and more safety. But I want to role play with you for a second, because I want to be as objective as possible on this podcast. I want to put a MAGA hat on for a second, and I want to speak as a MAGA person. How am I catching up with Donald Trump? Because Donald Trump told me no more wars. But we're going to have now troops in Gaza, Panama, and Greenland. Donald Trump told me that he was going to solve the Ukrainian crisis in 24 hours. And now we know it will be years, if possibly longer. And he's moving the ball so quickly up and down the field. And I want to be with him, Catty Kay. I want to side with him. Donald Trump told me that he was against TikTok before he was for it. And if I was a member of the House of Representatives, I voted against TikTok. Now he's for TikTok. So be MAGA for me and tell me why they like this. Call Donald Trump for me. Hello, Mr. President, how are you? Yes, you're going to ethnically cleanse Gaza. Okay, just out of curiosity, sir, what is your thinking behind that? This is 4D chess, and I understand that. So give me the 4D chess move here, sir. What is it, Gaddy?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a question with Donald Trump, is he playing chess or checkers, right? Is this Gaza move just an opening gambit to get a conversation going that gets Saudi Arabia involved? And he says, okay, I want Jordan and we're going to take all of the Palestinians out of Gaza. And then actually Saudi Arabia, as it has done already, turns around and says, no, that's not going to happen. And so Donald Trump says, well, okay, you're not going to accept that, but you've got to skate, you've got to give me something. So maybe you give me something that is short of a Palestinian state. I mean, is that how he's thinking? Is he thinking checkers? Is he thinking, I will get to a better deal for Middle East peace? And there are plenty of Arabs who are have been very optimistic that Donald Trump is the only person that can actually get to a proper deal here, and that this is the crazy opening gambit to get to something else, to get the Saudis basically to accept that there's not going to be a Palestinian state. I don't know if that's what he's thinking. in terms of his support, look, the latest poll numbers for Donald Trump are that he's never been more popular. His popularity at the moment is about 50%. It's gone up since he was inaugurated. The velocity people are liking, they see this as energy. Steve Bannon on his podcast, The War Room, this week called this magnificent, what is happening. And to some extent, Donald Trump's followers who listen to a lot of, you know, Joe Rogan and Steve Bannon will follow what they are told. And that will, and, you know, the perception will be filtered through those outlets. And if they are being told by Fox News and Joe Rogan and Steve Bannon that this is fantastic and the disruption is great, and at the same time, you're not having a lot of pushback from any coordinated opposition. So people are going to think, hey, maybe this Gaza, why not? You know, there's something to this. Gaza is bombed out. Nobody can live there. Just move people out and we'll build something and America will own it. Greenland, yeah, great. We'll have the, you know, the minerals. We'll have that too. Why not? I mean, if you buy into the idea of an imperial presidency and an imperial country, then I guess you buy into all of this. Now, when will he start to get pushback? He doesn't like it when the markets fell, which is what happened when he announced those tariffs. People won't like it if they suddenly have to pay more for their groceries, which is what the tariffs would have led to against Canada and Mexico. And there will be, in that respect, if the price of eggs, whatever the reason, avian flu, whatever it is, keeps on creeping up, that could be a problem for him as well. I mean, in the end, that's what many swing voters voted for, was for prices to come down.
I know we're going to go to a break in a second, but I just want to suggest this to our viewers and listeners. There's a risk that people are overanalyzing this. And it could be very simplistic. It could be that Donald Trump is addicted to attention. And so if I'm going to spout out 25% tariffs, everyone's going to go berserk. I'm going to move the market. Some of my buds can insider trade that market when I tell them on Monday or Tuesday that I'm going to delay the tariffs. If BB needs some help from the alt-right in his coalition in Israel, I'm going to get to the microphone and tell them we're going to wipe out Gaza. They'll love it, the alt-right. They'll love it. And, you know, and I heard him say this. He said it to me, you know, if I ran for prime minister in Israel, I would win easily, you know, and he's all braggadocious about that. So yes, there's the analysis of him and what he's trying to do. But it could be that simple, Caddy, that the man is ridiculously addicted to attention and he wants to turn up the heat every single day so that pundits everywhere around the world are setting their hair on fire and talking about him while he's recording them on his DirecTV server in the study adjacent to the Oval Office, giggling at how upset and owned these people are. And I just want to make one last quick point. If you were personality profiling him and you said, is this 4D chess or is this a dude that is sunsetting a little, neurologically declining at age 78 and is looking for more and more attention? Which one is it? I'm going with the latter, Caddy K. I'm going with the latter.
We're going to take a break and come back and look at actually some of the challenges that Donald Trump is already facing in his path.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Now, politics is full of so-called red flags. These are signs that something is about to go wrong. And part of my job when I was working for Donald Trump was to spot these before anyone else did and make sure that we had a plan in place. My God, so many different crises. But at the end of the day, it was really Donald Trump's lying that we were trying to get our arms around. And of course, we spent so much time focusing on the negative, it can really get you down. Therapy has helped me to think not just about red flags, but also about green flags. So green flags are the qualities that reassure you about a person or a situation. Now, obviously, I didn't see many of these during my time in Trump land. However, once I started looking for them in my personal life, I found them in most of the people and things I surround myself with. But it's practice and a habit which takes time to build. Therapy can give you the tools for just that. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com. /TripUS. That's better. HELP.com/TripUS.
Welcome back to The Rest is Politics US. So everything seems to be going Trump's direction. We've called him the imperial president. Somebody said to me his face is going to end up on Mount Rushmore, and he's the most powerful American president that they can remember ever. But if you look between the cracks, you can see places where Donald Trump is already being restrained. I would recommend, at the risk of committing podultery, I would recommend you reading Ezra Klein's essay or listening to him talk about how you shouldn't believe Donald Trump when he says everything's going
his way.
You
don't want to share the love with these other podcast people, no?
I think it's very nice too. I think we can share love. I think Ezra's doing a good job.
But I'm Catholic. I feel very guilty all of a sudden. I feel like I gotta go to confession.
Well, I know that our producers have accused you of podultery on the odd occasion when you've turned up on
the competitors. Oh my God, yes, I have caught
their
wrath. That is true.
But look, I think it was a very good point to make, because actually, let me run through the list that I have where Donald Trump has tried to do something but already been pushed back. We mentioned the tariffs against Mexico and Canada. He announced those. The market fell pretty dramatically, and very quickly he rolled them back against both countries. So he couldn't get his way with those 25% tariffs. The administration tried to stop an across-the-board spending freeze in the United States. Two judges have already blocked the White House from doing that. They announced with an executive order that they were going to end the constitutional right to an American passport to anyone that was born in this country. That was blocked almost immediately by litigation. So you've got instances where they have tried to do something and it hasn't worked because the courts have stepped in or the markets have stepped in. But you've also got other areas where they've tried to do something and it hasn't worked because of lack of infrastructure or because of market forces. So, for example, Donald Trump has urged American oil producers and global oil producers to drill, baby, drill. Both, according to the Wall Street Journal, both U.S. frackers and the Saudis have said they're not going to drill anymore because there is no market incentive for them to do so. They have rounded up something like 8,000 people in the country illegally so far, but some of those have had to be released because they don't have the facilities in which to detain them yet. So I think the point of going through that kind of list is just to remind people that in all of this storm of activity where Donald Trump looks like he is in supreme control, has shattered any opposition to him because he's moving so fast and doing so much, when you actually drill down into some of these, the sum of the activity is less than it appears. And I think on this podcast, we've said lots of times, we want to make sure that we look at signal, not noise, and what is substantive and what is performative. Well, quite a bit of what he's done so far has been performative. And just to be clear on that, because it's a check on Donald Trump's assumed power.
Yes, you're right about all that, but the imagery is bad. If you're outside the country, you're outside the United States, and you're seeing what he's doing, it's going to affect your behavior. It's going to make you potentially create some unnatural alliances for yourself against the United States. It could, you know, even if it's not empirically, the data suggests he's not doing a lot, this smoke show of him could cause people to change their behavior.
Is that particularly true globally, do you think? My sense is that that's more of an issue outside of America in terms of America's international relations than it is domestically.
My conversations here in London have been, wow, we may not be able to rely on the Americans like we once did. You know, the Americans created great monopoly power, and now they're going to shut down or they want to hijack us, which means that we're going to have to find other vendors to ally with us on security, energy, other big issues, economy, et cetera. And so I guess, you know, he's playing four-dimensional chess, but he left the tariffs in place with China, 10% on lots of goods, 15% on liquid natural gas and a few other items. And Chinese responded, said, okay, we're going to hit you with our tariffs, but we're also going to slow down our exportation of rare earth minerals, which you and I both know, Gaddy, we don't have enough of, which is why he's saber-rattling about Greenland. And so what happens when the consequences of the trade war really start to hurt these tech companies? Because we need, whether we like it or not, the rare earth minerals that we've been getting from China. So again, I don't know who's in the room with him. Years ago, 2017, 18, I wanted to do XYZ. Economic people, Gary Cohen, others said, whoa, can't do that. We're way more conjoined in the economy. We're way more interconnected in these economies than people think. So you just can't pull one string because you'll unravel other things, Caddy.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's a good example of that. When Donald Trump threatened tariffs on Colombia because the Colombian government would not accept military aircraft with detainees flown into Bogota, the Chinese ambassador to Colombia posted on X, reminding the Colombian people that Colombia's foreign minister had visited Beijing the year before and describing the bilateral relationship as the best moment in 45 years. Colombia has been America's steadfast ally in a region where many countries are not aligned with the United States. So the Chinese ambassador saw the opportunity and acted on it and messaged to the Colombian people, look, we'll be your friend instead. And don't think that isn't being replicated. Don't think that the Chinese ambassador in Ottawa is not thinking, gosh, how can I make the most of this moment? The Chinese ambassador in Mexico City is thinking, how can I make the best of this moment? I mean, I've said it before, when you shut down US aid programs, a tiny percent of the American budget, it is a gift to the Chinese and to the Russians. So that's happening internationally. I mean, you ask who is in the room with him when he's making these plans. Is he getting good foreign policy advice on Gaza, on tariffs? I mean, it's clear that lawyers are not in the room with him because many of the things that he's proposing domestically are already facing legal challenges. I mean, maybe he just doesn't care. I think another sign of his weakness, by the way, is that he's doing all of this by executive order and not through Congress, because if he actually was in a position of strength, he'd probably try and get this through passed as a law that couldn't then be overturned. But when you talk about Congress, where are the Democrats at the moment in opposition? What are you hearing in terms of any opposition from what should be the opposition party to Donald Trump?
Caddy, it was always great risk for you doing this podcast with me because I would say something that would get me in hot water, a result of which, unfortunately, you're conjoined with me, so you would also be in hot water. So this could be that.
No, I just try and rescue you and get you. I pull you out of the boiling pot and put you into kind of a slightly warmer.
This could be that moment if I can bypass our goal hanger sensors with the following several statements. So let me make them, okay? We have a fossilized old folks home in the Democratic Party. Okay, and that may be ageism. People can say that, but it really isn't. It's just an observation. You've got Chuck Schumer, 26 years, 20, now in his 27th year as a U.S. senator. He is too old for this stuff. He's not moving quickly.
A Democratic senator told me this week that Schumer had had a very bad week.
Yeah, and why did he have a bad week? Why? You know why. Tell our viewers and listeners why.
Because he hasn't mounted an opposition amongst all of this. He wants to hang on to his position of leadership. He doesn't want to give it up. But the really reason he's had a bad week, he looks old, Anthony. What have we learned from the last election and what the Democrats went through last year? However cognitively on top of it Joe Biden may have been, he looked and sounded old. Chuck Schumer looks and sounds old. That's why he's having not just a bad week, but a bad moment. I think that's the reality.
My heart goes out to the Senator Feinstein family, but I just have to say to the family, and I have to say to people here, wheeling her around in a chair in the Senate is not fair to the American people, and it's just not fair to the citizens of California. I'm sorry, just going to tell you that. So I know we've had another woman that was in an old folks home, and she didn't even know what she was voting on. And so you're trying to mount an opposition, but you don't have anybody in the room that's up for the fight. Now, whether you like it or not, Donald Trump, as it relates to his energy, he's got young energy vibes. He's 78 years young. He's not 78 years old. and he's surrounded by a team of willing acolytes that waited 4 years. And they all said to themselves, man, if we can get Trump back in office, we're so organized. Let's rip up this democracy. Let's Curtis Yarvin the democracy, and the democracy's obsolete. And you don't have anybody on the side of the Democrats sitting around saying, see, if I was a Democratic leader, I would be in Silicon Valley. I would fly to Silicon Valley. Remember what the DNC chair said? There are good billionaires and bad billionaires. I go find the good billionaires, at least in their minds, who's good and bad. And I say, hey, fellas, what do you guys want to do? Men and women, what do you want to do? You want to let them run the card table? Or do you want to try to retake this thing and foment a narrative against these people? If I was the DNC chair, I would go to Chris Christie and I would go to the old Republican Party and I would try to attach them to my party. They can't do that because they're going to offend the alt-left. But let me tell you something. The country's in a big struggle. This is an oratorical, an ideological civil war. So why don't we do what the Republican Party did in 1858? What did they do? They went after the normal Whigs, Caddy Gay. And they went to the Whigs and said, you don't want slavery anymore. A lot of your people do, but you really don't. Join us, this new Republican Party. We have this Republican first presidential candidate named Abraham Lincoln. And they killed that party. No more Whigs. Democrats could say, hey, man, let's kill off this MAGA party. It's not really the Republican Party anymore. And the way we're going to do this, you guys join forces with us. I'll handle AOC. I'll handle Looney Tune left people and ultra wokeism. Join forces with us so that we can break down the new Whig party, known as the Republican Party, which is actually the MAGA party. Okay, so go. Why aren't they doing that, Caddy Cat?
On a strategic level, here's what I'm hearing. The reason you're not having senior Democrats speak out about what Elon Musk is doing this week in Washington is they feel...
Can you rephrase that as a senior citizen Democrats? Would that be okay? Go ahead, keep going.
The reason you're not having some of the Democratic Party's leadership at the moment speak out against what Elon Musk is doing is that they believe their lesson from the last election was to focus on the American working class and focus on economic issues, and that there is actually very little support around the country for anything to do with Washington, for government, for USAID, for government workers. And actually what DOGE is doing polls pretty well around the country. The idea of blowing up Washington and hang the consequences is something that the American people like. They tried to run on let's save democracy. It didn't get them anywhere, the Democrats. And so now they're kind of like, they feel that that whole subject of democracy, government, civil service, rule of law, transparency, they feel that is toxic. They're struggling with how to message on that, is what I'm being told. And then the other thing that they are doing on a kind of more positive note, but this is in the House, and you and I know kind of several of the kind of young Democrats in the House who I think actually are very impressive at the moment. What the House has done just this week is put $50 million into an ad campaign against a dozen vulnerable Republican members around the country. And it's very early in the election cycle. They've rarely done this before, started advertising so early. But what they're trying to do is soften the ground under those Republican members' seats. And their focus is on taking the House back in 2 years. And maybe the thinking is, we actually can't do much to stop Donald Trump. He's got the House, he's got the Senate, he's got the Supreme Court, he's got public opinion on his side. What we have to do is focus on the House of Representatives in 2 years' time and winning back the House. So that is where our block will be. Now, that argument holds up if Donald Trump is going to respect Congress. But what we talked about in the first half was Donald Trump not respecting the powers of Congress. Congress is meant to have the power of the purse. Congress has rolled over like a little puppy dog and is not doing anything. If Donald Trump is just going to disobey the law, break the law, break the Constitution, it's going to have to be up to the courts to push back. Congress may no longer have the power of the purse. So I don't know that just focusing on the midterm elections to rescue them is the winning strategy for Democrats at the moment.
I think there's a lot of people in the country that are upset with what is going on. And I think they're fragmented into a couple of different groups that are not coalescing.
I'm not hearing it, Anthony. I'm not hearing loads of people upset. I mean, I'm hearing Democrats upset, but where are the big protest marches around the country? Where's the big marches that you had when Donald Trump was first? I'm still hearing a lot from a lot of Democratic people that I talk to around the country, they're just turning off the news. They're not, and there's so, this is Bannon strategy. There's so much news. How do you keep track of it all anyway, even if you were engaged?
Let me restate it. These are marketing competitions. This is a marketing competition. You're losing the marketing competition because you don't have a threaded narrative, and you could get a threaded narrative. You've got Hollywood on your side. You've got television production people on your side. You've got writers on your side. You've got Silicon Valley billionaires on your side. Get into a war room like Steve Bannon and come up with the counter narrative and come up with ideas that will make these people feel better about their lives. And it's not impossible, Caddy. And I'm just surprised that they're this disorganized.
Yeah. I mean, it's partly message and it's partly messaging, right? It's partly policy. What are you going to do to win people over? And then how are you going to message it? So look, Donald Trump has some roadblocks, but at the moment, not very much opposition. I suspect that next week is just going to be as busy as this week, which is why, quick reminder, we will be back on Monday with our live YouTube session, because Anthony has realized that he is living in a podcast.
I told Gary Lineker, I told the new title of my book, My Life in a Podcast. He said it would make a great movie, Gary said. Well, then it's fine.
You think
1 hour a week.
I bet you loved that, didn't you?
I enjoyed it.
You loved that.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I bet you did. Yeah. Starring in his own movie, Anthony Scaramucci, His Life in a Podcast, coming to cinemas near you soon.
The Coffee Maker. The title of my movie is going to be The Coffee Maker.
By the way, thank you very much to the young lady in Melbourne, Australia, who sent Anthony a video explaining how to make coffee in the morning so that next time he gets up early, he can actually make his own damn coffee rather than have to have somebody bring it to him in his household. It was a very good video. I watched the whole thing and I hope you did too.
And I did respond to her. I sent her a very nice email saying, given her technical skills, I'm sure she's very good in school. So keep up the good work.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Thank you again for joining us.